I'd like to call the meeting of the Lazard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council order. Good morning, folks. I believe Darby is the only one who has not yet arrived, but I expect him shortly. So I'd like to proceed. Members, you have before you the packet for today's agenda. Obviously the most important item is that we have an appropriations bill that we'd like to finalize today and forward to the legislature for consideration. This will entail our recommendations for the fiscal year 2011 allocations from the Outdoor Heritage Fund. We have a number of administrative items. We do have a decision item regarding an amendment to an accomplishment plan, and that's going to be regarding a particular project regarding the WPA. Beyond that, again, the major item is the appropriations language that we will then hopefully finalize and then pass on to the legislative bodies for their consideration. Remember, we have an agenda before us. Motion to adopt the agenda as proposed. Any further discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion adopted. Members, we have two sets of meeting minutes. The first set is from December 8th and December 9th. Those are stapled together, two pages, double-sided. The second is from the following week, December 15th. Also, three pages worth of meeting minutes. We need to take these up separately. So I'd like to take up the December 8th, December 9th meeting minutes first. Motion to adopt the meeting minutes as drafted.
I'll make the motion.
We have a motion to approve the meeting minutes as drafted. Give you a second to take a look at these. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The December 8th, 9th meeting minutes are approved. Second set of meeting minutes, Tuesday, December 15th. Motion to approve these meeting minutes.
Motion to approve.
Discussion on the motion. Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Meeting minutes are approved. Bill, catch your breath. Welcome.
I want to point out, as we look forward in today's agenda, I don't see anybody here from Pheasant forever. Could you represent?
Joel is here.
Oh, good.
Great.
For the executive director's report, what I'd like to do is take you through the analysis that we have of the bill. It's the packet that is bookended by the blue pages. And this should look familiar to you, some of it anyway. On the top is the LSOHC project locations. These are the ones that are in the bill. This is, you can see that there's some projects that were not included because there were no locations noted at the point of getting the draft accomplishment plan together. Specifically, the RIM-WRP partnership, as you recall, that's a sign-up program, so they can't tell us where they're going to be until after they run the sign-up, which will be spring and early summer. The Minnesota Prairie Recovery Project, the Accelerated Prairie Grassland Restoration Enhancement, and the Conservation Legacy Grant Program, plus the Minnesota Trout and Limited Fish Habitat and Restoration Enhancement. As we go forward, we will complete this as best we can.
Bill, on that point, if I may, so for the RIM-WRP, we simply don't know because we don't have a sign-up, but, for example, the last one, number 37, Trout Unlimited, if I recall, there are six projects that are identified. I mean, the streams have been identified, so it's just a matter of they didn't provide us the geographic location. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
So then there's the potential project locations. This would be things like the Shallow Lakes Program, that sort of project. I'd like to direct you to the map of the sections with the bar charts. This is a depiction of the geographic distribution of the different categories of expenditure, enhance, protect, and restore by area. The bar charts are all based on a $25 million x-axis, so they are relatively correct. We also have a set of pie charts that portray the item, the information in a similar fashion, the by LSOHC ecological section, the funding, and for the funding, you can see that it's not evenly distributed. And then there's a pair of bar charts which show the enhance, protect, and restore by region. Once again, there is not even distribution. And I should say that it's not necessary that there would be even distribution. We try to make our decisions based on the merits of the projects. The white pages are the budget, the additional budgetary items of interest, funds recommended in terms of out-year projection of needs from the people who we recommended funds to, the resource type and funding. On the next page, you'll find the acreage by resource type and the restore, protect, and enhance. And the table 5 is the stream miles or shoreland miles. Table 6 is basins that are affected. Table 7 is the leverage table divided into state and non-state leverage. The state leverage is nearly $3 million. The non-state leverage is $36 million. So it's about a 1.5 to 1 leverage ratio.
So that's very similar to what we had last year, about 50 cents of outside leverage for every $1 of outdoor heritage fund? Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. Okay. Table 8, acquisition data and tax data. You can see we haven't gotten the tax information in here yet. Mr. Bagden was in the office till late last night doing this, is my understanding. But we have about the same number of acres in terms of acres acquired in fee with state felt liability. I did a rough approximation yesterday afternoon on the PILT payment this will generate, and it's about $150,000 per annum. I want to go on to table 10, which again is acres within each ecological section. Table 11 is funding per ecological section. And then table 12 is the total project scope and other accomplishments within each ecological section. So we're still working on this. We're trying to get it prepared for session. The last blue sheet is a summary of the personnel identified in the accomplishment plans. So, for example, if you take a look at the RIM WRP partnership, they identified $107,400 worth of personnel in terms of a civil engineering, tech, and a realty specialist. Their personnel lines were $332,600. So they have yet to specify the $250,000 worth of personnel out there. We're working with them to get some specifics on who exactly they were planning on hiring or what type of person it is. I think that it's important to note that this data can be somewhat misleading. And I'd like to go to the Minnesota Land Trust, Critical Shoreline Habitat Protection Program, which is the second to the bottom on the first page, and it shows a total of 120,000 in personnel. But if you go look at that program, it's a program that's encouraging donation of easements, and they anticipate providing $5.5 million worth of donated easements. So be cautious when you take a look at the personnel, take a look at the product as well. Also, there's a big difference in an acquisition program and a restore and enhance program, where restore and enhance is liable to have crews or engineers or things of that sort that in a large amount, whereas the acquisition personnel is limited to perhaps a project manager and some professional services. So if there are any questions, this data is provided to you in advance of approval of the bill in the event that might cause you to come to the conclusion that maybe there should be some adjustment in the bill.
Questions for Bill or staff regarding this data? David?
I just have to ask on the Green Corridor Legacy program, that's three acquisitions of already identified property, am I right?
I believe that you're correct.
With a cost of $45,000 for Mr. Cobb to do three acquisitions?
That is what he's listed in his accomplishment plan.
Does that strike anyone else as high?
Yes, I think that is high. I think looking at some of these, the question we need to ask for these projects is, we have existing staff that are paid by the entity, whether it's a nonprofit or whether it's a state agency, and they're doing additional work, which is funded. I think that that's okay. But if there is a substitution of their salary with these dollars, if they're already employed, if this is their job, and now you're substituting dollars, then I think you're into the constitutional problem, because it's a substitution of existing effort, where the dollars are supposed to be for additional.
I mean, I don't disagree with you. I think it gets a little dicey for some groups who live year to year on grants, and so if they have a grant that's ending, they don't get another grant. The person goes away, so this becomes a grant that can keep someone doing the work, which is different than sort of a core staff position, which, I mean, it is a dicey proposition there. I think we have to be really careful before we start making the decisions. I think it's worth asking the question, but I think we would be wrong to just say anybody who is an employee, who continues to be an employee doing the work, is necessarily a substitution. But we ought to figure out how we ask that question intelligently.
Bill. The next step in this process is to start scrubbing these out. Remember, approval of the accomplishment plan comes after the appropriation is actually made. There could be a change or something like that. So in the next couple of weeks, we'll be talking with individual project managers, and have been talking with project managers about this very issue. And I think what we have to do is to amend the accomplishment plan to get a discussion of personnel and planning and supplementing written up in there. And we can do that hopefully before the session starts.
Rick? I think the challenge is the due diligence responsibility of the council prior to making recommendations. So we have in front of us details that we received from the project managers. I think that what you just said is we vote a recommendation and figure it out later. And what the past practice has been with the council is that you have interest groups that say you cannot change, the legislature should not change one sentence or one word in the document. And we may have information that comes up after today, if there's a recommendation made today, and there's information that comes up that I think looks like substitution. I don't think that we're in the same area there for recommendations. We should ask if we're going to vote, if we're fully informed and ready to vote. I'm not sure if we're fully informed on what this means on some of these projects. I think when we vote as a project manager to hear, we should ask and get on the record what's involved, rather than saying let's make a fully informed recommendation to the legislature and oh no, don't change a word of it because it's as good as it can be. I don't think we have a lot of information. We have details, but we don't have context.
Others? Wayne and then Scott.
I'm looking through these numbers, but all of the numbers kind of bother me is when we get down to $1.5 million going towards personnel. I was just wondering if that was the intent of this money, is to be used for hiring staff, or whether this money should be used to pay for contract services from those companies. There, like for instance, under the burn one, we already have burn crews out there, but yet we're going out and hiring. Our different organizations are actually putting together a burn crew and paying wages and everything else. While we're leaving those ones that are still out that already have businesses available, could be just contracted. So I'd like to make a distinction that maybe we're better off if we, in the future, we look at you hire somebody to do this and you don't put a staff on. It's usually hiring a staff is more expensive than hiring contract services.
Well, I would,
David,
having run burn crews, who are temporary employees, that's not always the case. You can hire someone to work for you for 6 weeks to run a burn crew, and it's a lot cheaper than hiring a service that has all the overhead attached with it. I wouldn't want to see us make an absolute, you have to hire a firm that offers that. I think you have to do what's most effective at getting the work done, both in terms of cost and being on the job when you need them on the job. And we ought to give people, we ought to leave people flexibility to do what's most effective.
Right. And recall, members, that in our appropriations bill, there's a requirement that any entity receiving money from this appropriation has to contact the Minnesota Conservation Corp for any restoration and enhancement work. And that's really the first point of refusal before any other work is done. Scott?
Can I change subject?
On this point,
yes,
Bill, there should be some clarification. At least I'm interested in some for the accelerated shallow lakes wetlands on the second page. Again, talking about wages, we have a new hire for a biologist for $240,000. There has to be some kind of an explanation for that. When I'm seeing the other ones at $130,000, what does that number tell me? Well, that's an explanation that tells me the negative picture and the other picture as well. Is that a fair question?
That's a very fair question.
Sir. And I believe that is over the 3 year period of the grant. Okay, so I mean it's 240, but if that engineer stays on staff for 2 or 3 years while that grant is being spent. I mean, I don't think that's an annual rate. That's a rate for that engineer for the entire length of the project, which changes the way that looks.
I do have a question for staff. If you look on the far column, there are a couple of negative numbers. For example, under the DNR, the second page, the same page you were referencing, Bill, at the bottom, minus $478,000 in staff costs in the third year. Could one of the staff just explain how that... what that means?
And you're looking at the personnel listing?
Mm-hmm. This is under the DNR Accelerated Prairie Grassland Restoration and Enhancement Program. $389,000 in the first fiscal year, $867,000 in the second, and then a negative $478,000 in the third.
What we have on the personnel list one is what was enumerated in the first column is the individuals enumerated in the accomplishment plan. So what I'd like to do is work with the RIM WRP partnership.
Okay.
So there was a civil engineering tech and a realty specialist listed, and we asked them to enumerate who was being paid by the
personnel budget. $71,350 for the civil engineering tech, $36,050 for the realty specialist. The total of that is $107,400. So that was what was listed. However, if you go and look at the personnel budget in fiscal years 11, 12, and 13, they had a total of $332,600 listed for personnel. So there's an unspecified personnel, which is the third column, amount of $225,200. That $225,200 is the personnel line listed minus or subtracted from the individuals that were listed in the budget. So if you recall, we asked them to fill out a two-digit budget that shows personnel, professional services, things of that sort. And then for the personnel underneath that, for the personnel, we asked them to indicate who was going to be paid. And in the case of REM WRP, they accounted for $107,400 of the $332,600 and did not account for the $225,200. So a negative number is indicative of personnel funds that were not accounted for. A positive number is indication of an error in completing the form.
Kevin? Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair, Council members. Kevin Lyons, Conservation Easement Manager for the Board of Water and Soil Resources. I don't have your document that you've got in front of you to look at, so I don't see any extra copies here, but specific to the personnel budget, to the RIM WRP, what we did,
well, thanks, Scott.
What we're showing there is, again, is what Scott alluded to earlier in the question regarding an engineer cost. Those personnel costs are associated with a three-year period. We get this grant. This is the work planned over the time of the next three-year period to accomplish these activities. That's what that personnel budget is showing. So these are funds that will be used for the staff that I've identified, 1.5 FTEs for 3 years to complete this work. So either I did not understand what the council and Director Becker was looking for, but that's how we broke out our personnel budget, as well as the other expenses occurred. Everything that the forgetting the years, I think it's 10, 11, and 12, or if it's 11, 12, 13, those costs are broken down implementation-wise to accomplish the work over that three-year period and approximates how we anticipate the spending will occur.
So if I understand you right, Mr. Lyons, that last column of the table we're looking at is not necessarily unspecified, but those are personnel costs in the out years, in fiscal 12 and fiscal 13.
Correct. That this grant, the $6.895 million, that's a preliminary allocation, will, that personnel cost is that portion of that over the three-year period.
There was a question that came up regarding Ducks Unlimited's personnel budget. Is someone here from Ducks Unlimited who might be able to respond? And members, this is the appropriation on the second page.
Mr. Chairman, good morning. Members, John Schneider, Manager of Conservation Programs for Ducks Unlimited in Minnesota.
I don't know, Mr. Schneider, if you heard the question. We were about 15 minutes ago. A question came up about the personnel budget listed under the Accelerated Shallow Lakes and Wetland Enhancement Restoration and Protection Partnership Program that's being recommended for funding. There's a listing of a number of employees and an associated cost with that. One question that came up was the first item, the first role, a DU biologist, $240,000. Could you explain a bit more about, do you have that in front of you?
I do, Mr. Chairman.
So it's on the second page in the middle. It's an unknown new hire. It says $240,000. Could you explain the basis for that amount?
Mr. Chairman, council members, yes, I can. I will say that Heather sent me some questions before the executive council meeting, and we looked at those numbers, and I sent her a revised budget. We knocked that down to 220. That's a conservative estimate of what it would cost to hire a new professional biologist with a master's degree for 2 years, using our cost structure that's been federally approved by OMB circulars. That's the estimate that we think it'll take to hire a new highly trained wildlife biologist, preferably somebody that's a certified wildlife biologist, to work in southern Minnesota for, as Kevin said, for at least 2 years, the duration of this grant.
And then, so the other personnel listed, are those also for multiple years as well?
Mr. Chairman and council members, absolutely. This is a two-year budget. In our case, we're thinking at least 2 years. We understand that there may be a longer time span for acquisition projects allowed. At least one of those gentlemen will be doing our land acquisition work, so it could be up to 3 years.
Rick?
And that land acquisition work, is that working on tracts that are already identified and bringing them into acquisition, or is that searching for new tracts?
Mr. Chairman, council members, it's a combination, because our grant is for acquisition and fee as well as conservation easements. Conservation easements, we have several lakes identified that we'd like to work on. So the lakes and the sites are identified, but it's hard to approach landowners to do land deals without funding. So we don't have the specific deals lined up. So there will be some outreach, we call it, with landowners there. The acquisition, the fee title acquisition, is largely for Moonshine Lake. That's our target area. We've talked to some landowners there, but again, it's a chicken and egg thing where we don't want to get too far ahead of the funding before we start talking seriously about land acquisition. So that the lakes are identified, but not the specific tracts. So there's quite a bit of legwork left to do.
Rick?
With Moonshine Lake, of individual landowners, is the watershed district one of those landowners?
The watershed, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Council members, the watershed indeed is one of the landowners. They have expressed an interest in working with us. Their primary concern is flood storage. They indicated a strong interest in working with us if their flood storage needs are met as a result of the project, which includes their piece as well as several other pieces of the drainage Moonshine Lake bed.
And so a public entity already owns the tract. What would be the cost of that tract that we would be buying from some? The tract is already in public ownership, is that correct?
Excuse me, Chairman, Mr. Hansen, and members, that is correct. The watershed district, it's my understanding, the watershed district purchased that tract with the intent of trying to facilitate restoration of the basin, and their original plan was to try and buy up as much of the basin as they could and then sell the land to the Fish and Wildlife Service. This is going back 10 years now. That plan didn't come together. That was their intent. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service was generally on board with that plan at the time. Additional land acquisitions weren't forthcoming for a variety of reasons. Landowners changed, crop prices changed, and it didn't happen. Now we've got a new opportunity. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is still engaged, but they're not quite as eager to be the primary landowner, whereas the DNR is, because of the shallow lake restoration nature. It fits their shallow lake mission a little better. So, to answer your question, though, the watershed district intends to try and recover as much of their outlay for the land as possible. However, they are very interested in the project. They have committed historically to helping pay for the engineering and the construction of the project should all the land rights be secured. So we are in negotiation with them about what the price of their land may be, what they're willing to contribute to the project. They are waiting to see if we can buy up all the other tracts needed to restore the lake, and waiting to see what the restoration of the lake would look like in terms of flood storage before they commit to anything specific as far as price
and contributions to the project. Any other questions for Mr. Schneider? No, thank you.
Thank you.
Other questions regarding the information, and again, I just remind you that this was all put together quite quickly by staff, and they'll continue to scrub out this data, and that as specified in the bill that we'll be taking up, none of these appropriations can go forward until the council approves the accomplishment plan as we did last year. And it's that, as you recall, there was at least one accomplishment plan that we did not approve because of some of the budgetary items that issues that members have raised today. So keep in mind that that's a time when we will go through the details. The projects are what we're focusing on today, the types of restore, enhance, risk, protect projects, but we have that check in the system where not a dime can be spent until this council approves an accomplishment plan. But other questions, Scott?
I have one on table 11. Where is our other half of the Forest Legacy funding on table 11? It doesn't appear to me that that was an appropriation in this year, but it does not look like it's in there. Am I missing it?
We have not added the $18 million into the tables per se. They were added into the pie charts, I believe. Is that correct, Mr. Bagman?
That's correct.
And one of the problems we have here is that's an appropriation that's already been made, and this data is supposed to reflect this bill before you. And if we put that $18 million in, somebody may go looking for it in the bill, and it's not there. So that's the way we're trying to handle this.
Very good.
Other questions? Bill.
Please. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The two documents, Bill, with the state docs on it, the projected or potential and projected locations. Which one are we going to need? I mean, am I missing something here? Are we... Is the proposed project one, or is this still really working?
I'd like to have Mr. Bagnon explain this particular set of maps. Yeah. The project locations I understand fully. Then would you explain what's on the potential project locations?
Yes. Good morning, Council Member. The potential project's location is... Well, when I made this map, it was originally in color, so there's two different colors, one being these potential project locations, and the other would be just the project locations that is on the other blue map. The potential project locations are from projects such as, project number 17 or 33 and 34, which... I believe had a variety, a choice of different projects they could do, but they hadn't decided on anything per se. They had a number of applications, but they just hadn't decided on any yet. So they, in the accomplishment plans, they sent out, they just showed all the applications that they had, and I basically mapped all those application locations.
The very question I had was last year we kind of threw around the and it just came that way. We didn't roll the dice, but the projects that came out were 77. There were projects in 77 and 87 counties. And I'm just wondering what number I can say safely today that this year that we had a project, and that's not a big issue, but it's somewhat interesting to the public when you're talking about how many counties are involved.
We'll get that figure to you, but it will be the figure for the known projects. Won't include the RIM WRP projects and things like that where we're not sure where they'll go.
Other questions about the data that's been compiled? Okay. Thank you very much, staff, for pulling this information together. Again, this is a work in progress. They'll continue to scrub out the data. Next item is a treasurer's report, Bill.
I would like to direct this introduction to Mr. Hartwell, the treasurer.
David? Mr. Treasurer.
You have the administrative budget in front of you.
We had a discussion about it Monday in the executive committee meeting. The important items here, I think, are really the costs at the bottom of the page regarding finishing our 25-year planning effort and developing a method of project evaluation. Beyond that, you're looking at salaries and meeting expenses. There's not a lot that we can do there. The total budget is proposed at $687,000. That's less than the 1% allocation. There's the ceiling that's set up for this council's administrative budget. We had a contingency in the original budget, which we decided was unnecessary, and staff recommended we remove the contingency, which we encouraged them to do, which is what you're seeing today. So that's what you have in front of you. If you have any specific questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Questions? Wayne?
Mr. Chair, under the meeting expenses, what is the difference between member lodging and member trip lodging?
I think member lodging, and Bill, correct me if I get this wrong, but member lodging is if you come down the night before a meeting. Member trip lodging is if we do field trips.
Thank you.
Wait, Les?
The information distribution website maintenance future promotional items, do we list a separate line item or do we incorporate those into some other category here?
Bill?
There, Mr. Chair, there are two websites. One is the LSOHC website, which is basically taken care of in the full-time staff line. Sandy handles that. There is the LCC geographic database that's to portray all expenditures of the legacy money, including the expenditures that come out of the Outdoor Heritage Fund. And we have 19,000 in GIS assistance under staff to facilitate getting that up, going, and populated. I must say this is one of the areas of less than perfect information, and there's a variety of thoughts about how much this will cost for LCC as a whole and thus our share of it. But we'll just have to wait and see as we proceed through the process to find out what the actual cost is. And the $19,000 has been negotiated with Mr. Hubinger.
Other questions on the budget? For David or Bill? Rick?
Bill, how much was the expenditure from December 1st, 2008 to June 30th, 2009?
Bill?
A little over
$80,000. And then how much are we currently appropriated for this fiscal year, and how much of that has been expended?
$695,000 and $250,000 and change.
So we're halfway through the year, and we've expended $250,000. We have staff coming on lagging there, so the second half will be a little bit low. But is your analysis that we will be under the $695,000?
Depending on what we do about putting together a contract for the 25-year plan during this fiscal year, we would probably be under the $695,000.
So we could, if we were efficient here and we don't have a lot of more administrative expenses, we could clock the 25-year consultant in this fiscal year and reduce the budget.
A fair amount.
Other questions? If not, I'd like to entertain a motion to adopt the administrative budget as proposed by the treasurer.
So moved.
We have a motion on the floor. Further discussion on that motion, Rick?
I move to amend the motion to reduce the budget by $87,000 so that the total budget would be $600,000 for fiscal year.
So we have a motion to reduce the budget by $87,000. Rick, can you clarify where that reduction would occur, please?
I think that could occur in meeting expenses. We make a recommendation today, we will be reducing. We won't have really any more meetings this fiscal year. The fiscal year coming up, if we follow the same pattern as we had last year, we would have a series of meetings that it looks like what we did last year, we would be under that budget. So I believe $87,000 can be accommodated through meeting expenses, office expense, and then perhaps if we clock the calendar for the 25-year consultant, some of those funds this year.
We have a motion on the floor to reduce the administrative budget by $87,000. Is there discussion on that motion? Yeah, I guess I'd ask
Treasurer at all on that.
Yeah. The staff and the treasurer.
Let me just start by saying the meeting expenses are for 24 meeting days. That's the number of meetings approximately that we've had thus far. Nearly the number of meetings we had this far. I think we can get some economies there. I'm not sure about the office expenses given the move and that sort of thing. But we can manage. And I think that the point that Representative Hansen makes about what maybe either a carry forward or expenses that are accrued in the current fiscal year is a good one. We had 695, 100, and 100,000 of that 695, I believe, was for payment of DNR for the first 6 months. So effectively, we're running on a budget this year of 595 approximately. So I think we can do it.
David?
If Bill thinks we can do it, I can live with it.
Further discussion on the motion? Hearing none. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion adopted. The main motion is on the floor. Is there further discussion on the motion? We have an administrative budget of $600,000 for fiscal year 11. Further discussion on that motion? Hearing none. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion adopted. Thank you very much, David and Bill and staff, for putting together this budget. Our next item on the agenda is an amendment to the achievement plan. And he just walked in, so let's let Matt get his coat off and catch a breath.
I'm ready.
Great.
I'll do it.
Members, there, as Matt is getting his whereabouts together, there was a map, I believe, that was distributed by staff that shows the location of the parcel in question. It's Bill's got a copy of it. Whenever you're ready, Mr. Holland, welcome to the council, and good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Matt Holland. I'm Senior Field Coordinator for Pheasants Forever, and I am a person who's glad he's not a pheasant trying to make a living out there today. And with me is Joe Pavelko, who is our Director of Conservation Programs here for Minnesota as well. And we have an amendment to our WPA Acceleration Competence Plan. basically there's two parts to it. One is the addition of a couple of projects to our project list, and then the other is the parcel that you have the map before you, in which there are rim inholdings, easement inholdings, where we are requesting the ability to purchase that parcel with the LSOHC funds. So the parcel additions are being requested just to kind of as an insurance policy that should projects fall off the table for whatever reason, when the landowner does not want to accept or doesn't like the appraised value or what have you, that we are prepared to and have enough projects to move forward and get this the accomplishments of the plan done in a timely manner. Both of them are fully supported by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Both of them are additions to existing waterfall production areas that are built upon a complex of habitats. Actually, one is we're pulling in from the FY11 accomplishment plan that as well, just again to make sure that we have projects moving forward. So those are two projects that we're requesting in addition to the project list. The other piece is as you see the map before you, the Pelican Lake WPA addition is a parcel that has about 12.4 acres of rim currently on the property. Very high priority parcel for both the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Minnesota DNR. It's obviously lakeshore. It's obviously has some potential and threats due to development. It's also an area and part of something that, if you haven't been out to Pelican Lake, there's been a lot of activity out there, strongly supported by the Wright County Commissioners. What we're requesting is that we're able to use the funding provided here to actually acquire the parcels, the parcel in its total, including the rim in holdings. So that would be our request, and I'd be happy to answer any questions about that.
Mr. Hall, could you tell us a little bit more about the two parcels that you propose to include on the work plan? Can you tell us where they are and what county they're in, how big they are, and who owns those? I mean, they often mention names, but are these just a little more description?
Sure. One is off our current list for the 2011 accomplishment plan. It's a 160-acre addition to the Pelican Bottoms WPA up in northwestern Ottertail County. High priority for the Fish and Wildlife Service. It's got some river bottom and wetland and upland restoration potential that will significantly add value to that unit. The other is the Sacred Heart Waterfall Production Area addition. It's about somewhere between 55 and 60 acres, roughly 19 acres of wetlands and the rest upland. It's an addition to a 620-acre complex of both wildlife management areas and waterfall production areas. And one of the reasons we're asking for that to be added to the list is that it was initially proposed as a wildlife management area, but after discussing with the local managers and the Fish and Wildlife Service and the DNR, it was felt that it was better under federal waterfall production area ownership for the long-term management of the properties right adjacent to a WPA.
Questions for Mr. Holland regarding the request on the change in the accomplishment plan? Rick?
I'd like Mr. Lyons to come forward and explain what happens when we purchase a what's the state protection for the rim easement where the public has bought the easement, and what happens to that easement if this is bought out with a fee title?
Mr. Lyons, did you hear the question?
Mr. Chair, council members, yes. The rim, of course, the easement that's required is a permanent easement. The state retains that easement in effect in perpetuity, so nothing would change as far as the state's holding a permanent easement. And we typically would not release such an easement because things change over time, so we want to make sure that permanent protection is in place. Rick?
When was the easement entered into?
Mr. Chair, Council Member Representative Hansen, I do not have the history of this particular site. I wasn't aware of this particular project's specifics. I mean, I certainly can find that out and come back to the council with that information, but I do not have that in my head this morning.
Rick? So the private property owner entered into a contract with the state for a RIM easement that's valid, it's a permanent easement. And now we would be using the constitutional dollars through a grant to Pheasants Forever, so Pheasants Forever would purchase the property, including the easement, and they would then be the owner of the property. Do I have this right?
Mr. Hall?
Mr. Chair, this would become a waterfall production area. It would be a federally owned parcel, manages open and public hunting, fishing, other things. We would purchase the entire tract. Parsing out an in-holding like this, makes it very difficult for the landowner.
Mr. Lyons?
Mr. Chair, council members, the right Pelican Lake is certainly the critical shallow lake wetland area in the state, and it does have high priority from both the Fish and Wildlife Service, as well as the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, as well as the Board of Water and Soil Resources. We've been targeted. This is a high targeted area for the RIMWRP partnership as well. So these types of things can certainly occur occasionally. It's not a practice that we try to get in each other. They're complementary in this case. If there's additional public values by providing this activity, this occurs on a case-by-case basis, certainly not a common practice by any means, but on occasion it does occur where, the either expansion of the public, either federal or state activity is occurring, and we've been trying to put conservation out on the ground for many, many years, so we can't always predict the future, so that's how we describe this activity. To my knowledge, I believe we have approximately 28 such circumstances where the state and or federal has purchased a piece of property with a RIM reserve easement on it. And we hold about 5,200 easements, so it's not a common practice by any means.
Jim?
Mr. Lyons, wouldn't it also be true that with this public land all around those two easements, that it would really increase the value of those easements? I mean, they're not just individual isolated pieces of property there. Now that they have this buffer around them, it actually makes them more valuable, doesn't it, or doesn't it?
Mr. Chair, council members, I believe that would be obviously the case. More conservation would get on the ground and additional collaboration between all the partners, both on public and private conservation, is needed, and this is this is how we can make sure this works accomplished well into the future.
Sir?
Matt, just a quick question. Are you dealing with a solid, willing seller in this instance?
Mr. Holland?
Mr. Chair, we believe so. And, we in speaking with the appraiser, we don't believe the valuation of the acres under RIM versus the rest of the parcel are going to be valued much differently because of the unique nature of the lakeshore, the location of this property. So, it's... and we're following all the procedures for land acquisition as it's laid out by the contract here, and so fair market value is what the landowner and potential seller will see, and so that's it, and it may inhibit our ability to acquire the parcel if we number one, due to cash being limited, or number two, if there's issues with the seller.
Right.
Mr. Chairman, having the permanent easement on there limits the potential future development opportunities. Does that reduce the fair market value, the cash value of those acres specifically that are in the easement, not the rest of the parcel?
Mr. Holland?
Mr. Chair, again, in speaking with the appraiser on this particular parcel, again, it's each parcel that is unique. They did not feel that the valuation would be any different than the remainder of the parcel. Does that mean that on another parcel that wouldn't be the case? Certainly we've seen that, where when you encumber an easement, a property with an easement, the valuation goes down. But in this particular case, that doesn't seem to be happening.
Bill? Would you clarify what you just said with regard to what the appraiser said? Did he say that the easement would not affect the value of the property?
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Becker, the valuation of the property with the easement or without the easement would not be significantly different. That's our understanding from the appraisal.
So does that mean that the value of the easement that they're assigning to the easement acreage is zero?
Mr. Holland? Mr. Chairman and Mr. Becker, no.
No,
it would be the opposite. That it would be similar to what the rest of the acreage is valued at.
Right.
Well, if I understand correctly, the economic incentive long-term is that if you're a landowner and you're signing up for a wetland reserve program easement, keeping it as small as possible so that you have a bigger parcel potentially down the road that you could sell, you get the benefit of getting paid for the easement, and then you can still sell the property for the same value. It feels like double dipping to me. Now, it may be unique to this situation partially because of the location, but that's troubling from a policy standpoint long term, because I would hope that the incentive for landowners to enter into wetland reserve programs to protect that property, but then down the road, if we have other parcels that make sense for adding to the public land base, then we're not paying for it twice. Scott?
And I can't speak to this particular property on Lakeshore, but I can tell you that the difference in valuation between an easement land acre and an acre that doesn't have an easement on it in other circumstances is very substantial. We just finished a 80-acre acquisition in Nobles County that had a small portion of eased acres on it, and the non-easement acre was valued at $4,000, and the easement acre was valued at $900. Okay, so it doesn't appear to be the case here, but I think if we would ever stumble onto these in a different situation, it would have a very different value. And we would realize that difference.
David?
I was set to support something I didn't think made any sense until I heard there was no valuation difference. And I don't think it makes any sense to buy land that someone's already been paid for the easement value. I'd be happy to support a motion to allow you to do this, excluding those, but I can't support giving someone a payment the second time. It sets a horrible example that just tells other people there's ways to get more than your fair market value by playing this conservation game, and I just can't go along with that.
Wayne?
I need three questions in a row.
Go ahead.
Number one, the rim acres, it still remains the individual owner's responsibility to do the maintenance on those acres. Is that correct?
Mr. Goins?
Mr. Chair, council members, it would be, as it sits here today, that would be the case. If the Fish and Wildlife Service acquired it, then that would become the responsibility of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
So question two, then, if that was not included in the purchase, we would have to provide an easement across this publicly owned land in the future then to be able to get to it, to be able to continue to do his maintenance.
Yes, Mr. Lyons.
Mr. Chair, Councilor, that would be correct.
Okay. So then number three is, then in understanding where everybody else's their concerns is there a potential that we can take the appraised value of the land minus which has already been paid for those acres, because let's face it, let's say it's $4,000 an acre. He received $2,000 an acre, and he offered him $2,000 an acre for that, because land values have increased, even though maybe this was put on 5 years ago and the value has gone up. So would he take a reduced value on those rim acres?
Mr. Lyons, or Mr. Holland?
Mr. Chair, you know, certainly we will approach the seller with that. And but, you know, as part of the acquisition process, we present what the appraiser believes the fair market value of the property is to the landowner. So you're going in and telling the landowner this is what an independent appraiser believes the value of the property is. And then you can tell them that, but that's not really what the fair market value of the property is. You know, we always try to negotiate a donation, a contribution to the legacy of that particular parcel. I don't believe we can parse these out with the landowner and say, oh, you just keep the rim acres. I think it's all or nothing. And if it's nothing, then we won't get the parcel.
Mr. Hall, what's the estimated value of this 12.4 acres? Just ballpark it. Do you have a...
Land around this, Mr. Chairman, land around this area has been going from anywhere from $6,000-$7,000 an acre on up to $13,000. So it's high value property.
So $100,000 to $200,000?
Potentially, yeah.
Is there any are there any other non-outdoor heritage fund sources that could be used to acquire that part of this acquisition?
Mr. Chairman, yes. I mean, we will have some of that covered through our, you know, certainly our local chapter supports the acquisition. But again, if you're talking about $100,000, that may limit our ability. We don't have that much locally, certainly, and so that may limit our ability to go after it.
Other questions, David?
No.
Okay. Rick?
Man, I just want to follow up kind of the chain of custody here. So right now, private property owner, you would take constitutional money that's been provided to Pheasants Forever would purchase the property, and then Pheasants Forever would donate it to the federal government. So the federal government would own the property, and then there would still be the state rim easement on the property. That's the chain of custody.
Mr. Chair, yes, that is correct.
Any other questions? Members, Wayne.
I'd like to motion to accept the amendment to the achievement plan, but also include in the language that this is a isolated situation somehow, so people know that this is going to be their general run-of-the-mill thing we're going to do.
Okay, we have a motion on the floor to approve the amendment to the accomplishment plan. Is there further discussion on the motion? Les?
Just one quick one. Matt, if the land is valued at, say, $6,000 an acre, do you know what the original rim value was that he was compensated for?
Mr. Chairman, no, I do not. I mean, I believe we can find that information out for Bowser.
It would generally look at, seem to be logical that we would take the present assessed value, which is considerably higher than he probably received for the original rim easement contract, and look at a difference as really the potential market value as far as an acquisition.
Any other? Rick, I request for roll call. Roll call vote has been requested. Greg came over and was talked to me about possible limitations we might place on this. We do have a motion on the floor, but Greg, what thoughts?
Mr. Chairman, my thought is, and Kevin can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the state probably paid about 90% of the estimated market value for the township.
Mr. Lyons?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, council members, you know, without knowing the specifics of the easement, if it's been secured in the relatively recent past under RIM to BRP, it might have a different payment structure, but if it's an old RIM reserve easement, which I believe it is, you know, prior to the RIM to BRP partnership being underway, yeah, we would have paid 90%. The average assessed billable value.
And Mr. Chairman, to get at David's point about double payment, I mean, one way to handle it would be to basically say that that you have to subtract off
90% of the estimated market value for those acres. So you're only paying because you've got to remember this. Even if the state bought the paper this 20 years ago at 90%, if you just subtract up what the state paid, the state's value of its easement also increased in value, not only the landowner. So it seems to me that you'd have to say subtract 90% of
use,
the
use the same percentage.
Use the same percentage and the same formula or whatever to subtract up. Then you wouldn't be double paying for this land if you did that.
Wayne, I'm wondering if you would accept that as a friendly amendment.
I certainly would.
So I'm going to give Bill just a second to jot some notes on to restate.
And Mr. Chairman, you may want to make sure. I mean, Kevin needs to go back and check on this. And basically, so you get at the same percentage, so that the state paid 90% of the value of the land. That you're not going to repay anybody for that or pay anybody additional money for that portion. I mean, it'd be important to get that so you're paying only the difference, because otherwise you are paying this landowner twice. I didn't mind.
So maybe just kind of the mechanics of what you just described.
Well, I assume that the payment was 90% of the estimated market value for tillable acres in that township. If that's the case, then I think the only fair way to do this would be to subtract off 90% of the estimated market value of tillable acres in the township from whatever the value is of the acres that are adjacent to this property. So if you subtract that off, then I think you get at what the state didn't buy already.
So what you're talking about is an amendment to approve subject to paying the remaining portion of the value on the property covered by the RIM easement, consistent with what was paid when the easement was put in place.
Yes, and Mr. Chair, we don't have all the information as Kevin would need to check on that. So I don't know.
You use the same for you could
just basically
define it as percentage,
right?
Whatever it was.
Subtract off whatever the state percentage of the property value was paid at the time.
Bill,
you had asked me to try to put this into a motion, and I thought I had it until this last sentence. So. But the motion is something like to approve the amendment with the condition that this is an isolated incident and should not be considered practice or precedent, and that the east acreage compensation shall not exceed, this is where the problem comes in, 10% of the current assessed market value of tillable acres in the township of the east property.
Well, sure, the only problem with doing the 10% level is this may not reflect the actual value of this property may be higher than the estimated market value. So you would still want to pay the market value. I would say it differently. I would subtract the 90% of the estimated market value for tillable land in the area from the appraised value.
Or just these
12.4 acres. I would subtract. I think that you get at it. I think you get at a fairer way of doing it.
So just so I'm clear, Greg, what you're saying is within this blue area that we're looking at, everything outside the yellow would be fair market value. Anything inside the yellow area would only be the residual value.
Would be fair market value minus 90% of the estimated market value for tillable land in the township. So you get at what they were, you're getting at the kind of the current value of whatever they were paid at the time.
Wouldn't it be better to say less the percentage that was not paid for when the RIM easement was put in place? That way, if it was 80%, you're not shortchanging it.
Well, Mr. Chairman, David, whatever they paid at the time. But I'm assuming this is more than what 5 years old or whatever. It was probably 90% of the estimated market value. And I think you either can approve this now or you can wait till you get more information on it too. I mean, that's another option you have. I don't know how quickly this needs to be approved. But because you might have been meeting for a while, so.
We should approve it today, subject to whatever we want. Mm-hmm.
Jim?
Well, I think the other thing we want to remember, though, is you look at those two isolated pieces, what value do they have to the state or anybody now? They have really no value as wildlife. If they're left in private ownership, if the deal falls through, they could build houses all around those two isolated parcels, and they have no value to the state whatsoever. I mean, as a complete parcel, those two pieces have a lot more value to us. I think it might be a little penny-wise and pound-foolish here, trying to save, you know, 50 cents, and we're going to lose the entire value of the whole full investment there.
Les, just a quick one. Isn't one of the questions who gains the appreciation from the land on the rim? Is it the state or the landowner? And if he was paid, say, $200 an acre for that land, and now it's appraised at $6,000 an acre, the gain for the state has been, the development has been inhibited, and the landowner has not used that additional source. So I would say that the original rim payment being deducted from the appraised price would be a fair compensation.
However you think is fair. I mean, you know, the question is when the state pays 90% of the value of the property, does that 90% appreciate or not? Or does the landowner receive all of the appreciation after that, including the wildlife part of it? I don't know. That's a good question.
From a conservation easement standpoint, most easements done with land trusts, I can't say for government, but have a provision in them where if the easement is ever condemned, the value of the condemnation payment is split between the holder of the easement and the fee title holder based on the percentage that the easement was worth at the time the deal was done. Because of the feeling that if you got a tax deduction for 50%, you shouldn't get more than that when the property is sold, and the easement holder would get the other 50%. So appreciation flows to both parties in that scenario, and that is typical best practice in the land trust world for conservation easements.
Brian?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I feel like we're starting to micromanage a specific project a little too much. I think the bigger policy discussions that we were talking about are the key thing. But on this specific project, I think what our complaint is that the appraiser did his valuation. It doesn't seem to fit overall policy and precedent anywhere else. So I think our complaint is with the specific appraisal on this specific project. The bigger policy discussions, I think, are important. It would be awful if a landowner who invests in conservation by selling an easement on his property some time down the road is restricted, that he's not going to have the same advantages of being able to sell a bigger parcel that could have some great conservation benefits. This is a high-priority shallow lake. We absolutely want to protect as much lakeshore and provide wetland grassland complexes along it. It's important. I would hate to see us muck this up, but the bigger policy things, I think, are things we should be looking at the long term. But maybe our specific action should be aimed at the appraisal and not trying to micromanage this specific project.
Any further discussion? Bob?
Matt, just out of curiosity, if we pass this amendment, will this inhibit you from getting this thing done? This is got pretty good conservation benefits. I hate to see us lose it because of what we do. At the same time, I hate to see us double pay for something. So, Matt, what is this going to do to your ability to get this deal done?
Mr. Chairman, members, I won't be here today. I'm not here to try to make your life difficult, believe it or not. You know, it's an opportunity. If we are unable to use the dedicated funding to purchase the property, we may not be able to get the project done. We will try like heck to find the private side funds to cover the cost of the for the value of the easement acres, but because of the value of this land and the location of it, it may jeopardize us being able to acquire this parcel. That's why we're here today.
Well, certainly the landowner knows he has been paid for 90% or 85%, whatever it is, for the land already. If we take that value and give him his inflation on value of that land from the state that he got his RIM payment, would that not give him the same value for all the acres?
Mr. Hall?
Mr. Chairman, I think folks need to understand that when we do an appraisal, we get a fair market value. That landowner is going to see what that fair market valuation is. And, you know, so you can go, we believe you. That's where the issue with what you're describing may come in. The seller may say, yeah, you're right. That does make sense. They already got paid. I'd like to make a valuation on a donation. Or the landowner may say, you just told me it was worth this, and now you're telling me it's worth something different. So,
right. I understand the landowner's position in this, but appraisers work on precedent. So if we set a precedent here that even if you've got an easement on a property, that you can still appraise it at the full market value as if it didn't have those restrictions on it, I think other appraisers are going to start doing that. And I think, I mean, this could lead us down a road. I mean, this is a precedent-based system, this land valuation. And I'm concerned that we're not going to be able to purchase future parcels because there's RIM easements attached to them, because we've set the precedent that we're double paying, and at some point we're going to say we got to stop doing this. So again, it gets back to the appraisal. I think the appraisal is what we should be focused on in getting a correct appraisal.
For further discussion,
Jim.
Well, I agree with Ryan, but again, if this parcel was sitting out in the middle of the weeds and nowhere land, I think that's a good argument. But to have a piece of property sitting on Pelican Lake in a metropolitan area, I think that's an entirely different discussion. And I think when we talked about this earlier about purchasing land with conservation easements on it, we said we'd do it on a case-by-case basis, specifically because these are not all the same. These parcels are not all the same. To have a piece of property on Pelican Lake in Wright County has a much higher priority in my mind than, you know, a piece of prairie grass out in Kandy, Ohio County. So I think if you look at this on a case-by-case basis, it's a relatively small parcel, 12 acres. I think if you look at the big picture, it's much more important that we get this deal done. And obviously we can make the case why we did it. Let's get it done. I think that's a much more important issue.
Wayne?
After listening to all the discussions, you know, there's so many different ways we can look at this, and I appreciate every single opinion because I feel in both ways. But I also would like my motion to stand as originally stated without the 90% and everything else, because I think what we'll get to the point is this is a one-time shot maybe, and we are not going to do this all the time. We're not setting a precedence. We just understand that in this particular situation, the value might be worth doing it.
Could you restate the motion, Bill, the way it sits now?
The motion is to approve the amendment with the condition that this is an isolated incident and should not be considered practice or precedent.
Any further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, the roll call vote has been requested. Sandy, could you take the roll?
Wes Bench?
Yes.
Ryan Bronson?
Yes.
Jim Cox?
Yes.
Wayne Anger?
Yes.
Bob Gunther?
Yes.
Rick Hansen?
No.
David Hartwell?
No.
Bill Anderson?
Yes.
Mike Kilgore?
Chair votes no.
Darby Nelson?
Yes.
Scott Rawl?
Yes.
8-3.
Motion is adopted. Thank you. Thank you. Remember, the next item on the agenda is the appropriations bill. We really have covered up item number 7 with the discussion about the maps and the tables, so I think we can move right on to item number 8, which is a decision item.
Bill, can you walk us through what we have?
I'm going to take you through page by page, but before I do that, I want to correct 2 numbers that have changed as a result of an amendment adopted earlier today. And that number is on page 1, the $59,027,000 should be changed to $58,940,000. And on page 10, under subdivision 6B, LCC, Legislative Coordinating Commission, $687,000 should be changed to $600,000. That being said, section 1 is the preamble to this particular bill and delineates the fiscal years that the appropriations are listed in. All appropriations in this bill are in fiscal year 2011. Section 2 is the total appropriation. Subdivision 1 is the total appropriation, which we just went over. Subdivision 2 are the recommendations for prairies. And page 1, we have accelerated prairie grassland restoration and enhancement program on DNR lands for $5.833 million. Item 2 is the Green Corridor Legacy Program for $1,651,000. Item C is Prairie Heritage Fund acquisition and restoration for $3,015,000. Northern Tallgrass Prairie National Wildlife Refuge is the next item at $2,041,000. Rum River Cedar Creek Initiative, which is to Anoka County and was committed to in the last recommendation in the bill itself, is $1,900,000. Item F is the Minnesota Prairie Recovery Project of the Nature Conservancy for $3,653,000. Division 4 begins on page 3. And is the forest section. Item A is the Critical Shoreline Habitat Program of the Minnesota Land Trust for $816,000. Item B is to protect key industrial forest land tracts in central Minnesota, which is to Cass County for $594,000. Item C is the Little Mississippi River Wildlife Management Area, which is $843,000 to the Commissioner of Natural Resources and to the Board of Soil and Water Resources. Item D is Accelerated Forest Wildlife Habitat Program at $1,791,000 to the Department of Natural Resources. Item E is the Northeastern Minnesota Red-tailed Grouse Habitat, which is $1,559,000 to Pheasants Forever for work in cooperation with the Sharp-tailed Grouse Society. Subdivision 4 are the wetlands recommendations. Item A is the Accelerated Channel Lake Wetland Enhancement and Restoration Program at $6.505 million. It's on page 5, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
And this is to Ducks Unlimited and to the Department of Natural Resources. 1.463 million is to the Department of Natural Resources. $5,042,000 is to Ducks Unlimited. Item B in wetlands is accelerate the waterfowl production area program in Minnesota at $3,505,000 and is for pheasants forever. Make a note that there's an unaccepted change that needs to be accepted too about this appropriation. Item C, reinvest in Minnesota. Wetlands Reserve Program acquisition and restoration is $6,895,000 to the Board of Soil and Water Resources for work with the United States Department of Agriculture's Wetland Reserve Program. Subdivision 5, Habitat. Item A is the Metro Big Rivers Habitat Program at $2,397,000 for a variety of partners. Item B is the Accelerated Aquatic Management Area Acquisition, $3,416,000 to the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. Item C is Coldwater River and Stream Restoration Protection and Enhancement, is $1,269,000 to Trout Unlimited, as the eventual ultimate recipient. Item D is Dakota County Riparian and Lakeshore Protection and Restoration, which is $2,097,000 for Dakota County. Item E is the Valley Creek Protection Partnership, which is $1.218 million for Washington County and other partners. The item F is the Anoka Sand Plain Restoration and Enhancement, which is $747,000 in fiscal year 2011 for Great River Greening. for work in a variety of metro-oriented counties. Item G is the Lower Mississippi River Habitat Restoration and Acceleration, which is $1 million to the Department of Natural Resources for acquisition. Those are in the river watershed. Item H is the Washington County St. Croix Land River Protection, which is $1.33 million to Washington County for work associated with the St. Croix River Valley. Item J is the Outdoor Heritage Conservation Partners Grants Program, which is $4,386,000 to the Department of Natural Resources for grants. Subdivision 6 is administration, another $175,000 for contract management to DNR for management of the pass-through contracts. It's a commitment to manage these for 3 years. Item B is the Legislative Coordinating Commission. This is the administrative budget for the council at $600,000. Item C is the Osage Sands Heritage Council site visit exception, allowing us to receive information essentially while on the bus and in travel status. Item subdivision 7 is the availability of the appropriation. The appropriation is available until June the 30th, 2013, which is 3 years. Subdivision 8 is the accomplishment plan requirement. Subdivision 9 is a variety of project requirements. I won't go through all those individually. You have the bill for a number of days. Subdivision 11 is payment conditions and capital equipment expenditures. And subdivision 12 is purchase of recycled and recyclable materials. These are standard items for appropriations bills that are going outside the money that state money is going outside the state. Subdivision 13, likewise, is an accessibility provision. Subdivision 14 is land acquisition restrictions. And then on page 16, the final part of the bill is the real property interest report, which is the method by which we ensure that the property continues to be used and the basis which it is intended. And that is the bill.
Thank you, Bill. And we've called the bill before you as a product of the discussion that the executive committee had on Monday of this week and has forwarded to you with a recommendation that it be supported. Just to get the discussion going, I'd like to entertain a motion to adopt the, to approve and forward to the legislature for their consideration the appropriations bill.
So moved.
Motion on the table. We can begin our discussion. Jim?
I would like to offer an amendment to section 5I, the Outdoor Heritage Conservation Partners Program.
That's on page
9. Page 9.
Okay. Do you have a copy?
I have a copy of it here. And basically what the amendment says, or I'll read the addition. Underline. Okay. The amended portion would be right after government that organizations, including government, that have a history or charter that demonstrates on an annual basis that they actively raise money for local conservation or habitat projects. I think the purpose of this amendment was, in my opinion, the purpose of the Conservation Partners Program was to stimulate conservation throughout the state of Minnesota, basically through private local organizations that had really no other option to get money to do the types of things that they wanted to do. If we looked at our first year's appropriations, as I read through it, there's an awful lot of them going to quasi-governmental agencies that already have budgets, and really, I think, stifle the really purpose of this program as we originally set it up. So I think with this addition, it kind of brings it back to the types of groups and the types of organizations that we originally intended this program to be set up for. And it will do a much better effort, I think, of stimulating efforts throughout the state of Minnesota to work on conservation.
So we have a motion to amend the bill by inserting the language that Jim circulated. Is there discussion on the motion, Darby?
Yeah, Jim, I'm just wondering, what do you mean by history?
Jim?
Do I have to, as an organization, have to have been involved for 20 years or 30 years or 2 years? Or?
Well, I guess the purpose of that, Darby, was that I don't think we wanted somebody who just decided, well, I want to do this project. I'm going to have a bean feed this year and apply for money. I think we want it to be a long-term effort and people that have a background that this is the type of work they've been doing. Not a one-shot type deal.
So we sort of define the length of the period called here kind of on an ad hoc basis. I mean, as each project comes in, we say, well, you know, this one was not adequate. This one was only up for 2 years. I'm just concerned that we keep running into issues with definitions, and I guess that's a continuation of that bugaboo that we deal with.
Right?
I guess my question is, what is actively raising money? Is going to LCCMR every 2 years to get money, is that actively raising money? Is levying a tax locally actively raising money? That's my question. You'd mentioned that some concerns about quasi-government. Would it be easier if we just said government entities aren't eligible for this? So I'm just looking for clarification. I'm not hostile to the amendment.
So keep in mind, members, that statutorily, the small grants program includes the language just prior to Jim's amendment, so that local, regional, state, and national organizations, including government, that's statutorily defined already in 97.
I wanted to say, I don't know if the language is perfect, but the intent is great, because my concern has been that we don't want to create just a dole of money. We want to create an opportunity for people to go out and push their philanthropic efforts a little more than they have in the past and build a culture that will support conservation long after this amendment dollars longer than the 25 years that the amendment dollars will be flowing. So the idea that we're saying you have to be out raising money for conservation to be eligible for this money, to me, makes sense. We can quibble about the language, but the intent makes great sense.
Other questions, Kyle? Wayne?
I totally agree with what Jim's talking about, too. I think that the intent of this small grants for a partnership program was intended to be able to help a lot of the small organizations. And when we start getting governmental agencies involved and taking a big share of the pot, I think it's wrong. And I also have the same problem. How do you get that into a definition? My concern is, excuse me, you still have local units of government that out there and can do fundraising. You can have salt and water districts that they raise money, for instance, selling seed and selling trees and planting trees, and so therefore that gives them the right then to be able to apply for this as well, which still could exclude sports. And so I think it's the definition, and I totally agree, we just need to define that, and I don't have a definition that fits.
Members, I stand corrected. The language is correct out of the statute, except for including government. That does not exist in the statute.
So? I think it would be good to read what the statute says. It's item B under subdivision 3. And it says, to encourage and support local conservation efforts, the council shall establish a conservation partners program. Local, regional, state, or national organizations may apply for matching grants for restoration, protection, and enhancement of wetlands, prairies, forests, and habitats for fish, game, and wildlife, prevention of forest fragmentation,
encouragement of forest consolidation, and expansion of restored native prairie.
Rick? I think the amendment kind of demonstrates some of the difficulty we have where we're talking about not what is being done, what is being protected, restored, or enhanced, but who. It's not, this whole thing comes from the fact that some of you don't like who got some of the money for the DNR. You want to prevent it from happening again. And it shouldn't matter who gets the money if they deliver the product, if they're protecting a wetland, protecting a forest, protecting the prairie. If they're following the statute, I believe that they're not double dipping. But that's what this is all about, trying to limit who can do the work rather than what the work is being done. And the voters voted to protect the resource, protect, restore, and enhance. That's what we should be looking at. Who can do, what is being done? Now, if somebody can't do the job, if somebody has a history of failure, if somebody has a history of not being able to accomplish these tasks, but put a condition on to say that they have to raise money, what does that have to do with resource protection? Nothing. Derby?
Yeah, I'm going back to this actively raise money, and we don't know what that really means, how much money. But I'll tell you, if we want to generate more money, should we reconsider our requirement for a 10% hard match and raise the hard match? That'll show us who's making some hard conservation commitment.
Let's go that out.
In response to this, Jim?
Yeah, in response to that. Well, Darby, so if the Red Lake Watershed District, we up the match, so out of their budget for the year, they take a bigger chunk to match this program. How have we stimulated conservation dollars in the state of Minnesota?
Jim, I'm just kind of struggling with how we operationally deal with actively raised money. It just
we can work on the language, but I don't think we want to lose the intent.
Scott,
you know, when we talk about who's getting the dollars out of the Conservation Partners Program, my thought process when way back when before dedicated funding even passed was that the element of the Conservation Partners Program would be to try to hand out small grants to the types of organizations that could not come or did not have the wherewithal to apply for other dedicated funding dollars. And so we have large organizations, you know, Bowser, RIM WRP came and they were funded very big. They work with soil and water conservation districts. And so lots of entities have come and applied for dollars and received dollars through our appropriations. And as Jim's intent, as is mine, is to take a small portion of that and allocate that out to the organizations that are not going to receive any other dedicated funding dollars from any other source. I mean, there's lots of organizations that get clean water money in different places, but this small $4 million out of the total of all the dedicated funding dollars, I think, should be directed to specific types of entities that have no ability to achieve a grant dollar from any other course. So, you know, I think it does, at least in this part of the program, I think it does matter who those dollars are being directed to. And that I refer to as the lowest common denominator of conservation, which is sportsmen's groups. And so a small portion of all the dedicated funding dollars with some type of language like this would achieve that.
Let me just build on that, Scott, because I think what's unique about this program is the intent. And the intent is to build a culture of conservation. You're absolutely right. It's really earmarked for those groups that might not be able to play with the big players on big projects. But as I see it, it's to build a culture of conservation that we need, that we don't have. And so, Jim, I agree with your intent.
my concern is shared by Ryan, or I share Ryan's concern, that in fact we may have an unintended consequence because a lot of government agencies levy taxes for the purposes of conservation and may be disproportionately advantaged as a result of this amendment. And I don't want to see that. I want to see those small, locally based conservation rod and gun clubs contributing to this and in fact building that support, enthusiasm at the local level for habitat projects. That's what I think the intent of this was and is.
Darby? Piggybacking on that, as I read this, how do we add new sportsmen's organizations? Some group that's, you know, wanting to have done stuff here over the years, never got their act together. Now there's money. We're essentially saying, you don't have a history. As a result of that, we can't consider you. I mean, that's the way I'm interpreting it.
Jim? Darby, it says history or charter. In other words, if you start a new organization and your charter says that you're going to be raising money for conservation, you're in.
All
right. Les? I'd agree with you, Mr. Chair, on your assessment. This is a history of going back to the voters when we initially were selling the concept of the dedicated funding. The 10% or whatever that amount of money was that we allocated to the local sportsmen to instill involvement of the local sportsmen. I don't think it's a matter of we're upset because the DNR is getting a chunk of this. If they can do the job better, I think it's the whole concept of stimulating that additional labor force, that additional force out there that gets involved with the DNR more and more. The DNR right now is not going to get enough money or enough people to maintain what they've got and to be able to bring these local groups in at a lot more cost-effective basis is, I think, going to stimulate it and it's going to benefit all the way around. So the past history is this is one of the keys that we sold the program on originally early in the game. And I don't think it's a matter of being upset because the DNR got the money. I think we should give the sportsman club a fair shot at this. We're talking about 5% of the total allocation here. So let's look at the original concept and see if we can figure out a way to keep that to the original concept, what we sold to the voters and what the voters voted on.
Okay.
Jim, maybe what we could do instead of actively raise money, we could say actively receive private contributions, and that would take it out of the levy taxes. Mm-hmm. So, type of world. I think we have to be really careful not to say these are the only groups that can get money, even if they don't do as good a work as other groups. I mean, ultimately, we're accountable that these dollars are spent wisely, that there are good results on the ground to show for it. And we better not create a situation where we're creating restrictions that say you got to be this kind of group and we don't care what kind of work you do, you can get money out of this. Ultimately, whether it's sportsmen's groups or government or anywhere else, you got to have great results and you got to be effective with the dollars on a competitive basis. But I do think we do want to think about how we can encourage long-term philanthropy into conservation. And the small grant program was certainly set up by all of us last year thinking that we were going to spread the money around and give opportunities to those who couldn't do big projects. And one of the ways to do that might be to say you've got to be in the business of raising small grants yourself on an active basis, which would be receive private contributions.
Is that a request for a friendly amendment to your?
Well, I'm just curious if we took the term raise on and just put earn, would that solve the problem?
You know, earn is a tough word because somebody could sell seed. The Soil and Water Conservation District could sell seed, and they're earning money. And if we're talking about trying to provide an opportunity for local groups, I think you want to say that is receiving private contribution. And then if the Soil and Water Conservation Service wants to have a fundraising campaign, more power to them. Expand their efforts, do more work, do more conservation.
Sure. I need to correct a couple things. I think the I said it's not that the DNR is getting the money, but the DNR, how the DNR distributed the money. If there are people who receive money that some of you disagree with, wasn't there a meeting yesterday? And some of you go to over a meeting with the DNR? Mr. Chair, who went and met with the DNR yesterday?
People who met with the DNR at their request, this was not our meeting, but their request was Jim Cox, myself, Les Bench, and Scott Rome.
So five members of the council?
No. Myself, Jim Cox, Scott Rawl, West Bench.
Four
members. Any other comments?
And was this amendment shared before the meeting with other members? How many other members saw this before?
I haven't seen it.
I saw it when I walked in.
Thank you.
Another comment is that the constitutional amendment did not have a conservation partner program in the constitutional amendment language. We keep hearing about how it was sold, but it was not in the amendment itself. Now, we've debated the conservation partner program extensively here and extensively in the legislature. And I think it is a good goal to have small groups, wherever they are, if they can do the job and provide quality programs, quality projects, protecting wetlands, prairies, forests, fish game, wildlife habitat. It should be the quality and the achievement of the project to do that rather than delivery mechanism.
Brian? Mr. Chair, I think one of the criteria that we're kind of silent on as well is the economic efficiency with which we're delivering this. I think there's a belief that the small groups that currently don't have the ability to compete for major grants through the bureaucratic process can efficiently deliver those things on the ground. I think we should also be looking to measure those things because we do have a fiscal responsibility to do this as efficiently as possible as well. And I think we're kind of missing the boat. We may assume that, but I'd like to see us measure that in the future.
Greg and I are reading each other's minds. Wolf and I had a suggestion to offer, which was to amend Jim's amendment, or ask for a friendly amendment that would focus on giving priority to those organizations. And I guess, Jim, I'd ask for you if you'd be willing to accept that. So it would say members, the commissioner being the DNR commissioner, shall give priority to organizations that have a history or charter to receive private contributions for local conservation or habitat projects. So it's not an exclusionary statement, but it's saying that these should be given priority consideration.
I would accept that.
And give us the bill and so we can.
The amendment as it stands now reads, insert after Minnesota period, on about the 10th line down, the commissioner shall give priority to organizations that have a history or charter to receive private contributions for local conservation or habitat projects.
And we have that motion on the table. Is there any further discussion on that motion?
Right. Further down in this section of the original language, we've got on the amendment too. I mean, there's criteria there for the criteria for evaluating grant applications. This kind of relates to the criteria aspect of the grant applications. Is this the criteria that the council still wants? I mean, this is last year's language that we've inherited, and I understand folks are not completely happy with the prioritization that came out of the process. should you be focusing on the criteria instead?
Well, I view this as one criteria. One,
I agree.
Yeah. So on the amendment, we have an amendment before us, members. Any further discussion on that motion? Hearing none. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion adopted. Back to the original amendment, or original motion, which is on the bill. Do we have any further discussion on the bill? Rick, was that your
name? Yes.
Rick.
Is there someone here from the Cass County Traffic?
Is there someone here from the Cass County Land Department? I don't see that, Rick, but you want to proceed?
Yes.
And what page is that?
I think it's on... It'll be in the fourth section.
Or B.
And my question goes back. We had some discussion at the last council meeting about Potlatch's responsibility or opportunity to provide donations on this. And I think what we had heard was that these were providing, these purchases were providing access to land. And I've had staff kind of look up some of these tracks that we're in. Now I realize we've dropped the number of the amount of funds that were available there, but it looks like a number of the tracks that were in one of the lists were totally surrounded by public land, so that these tracks were in holdings rather than access. And I'd like some clarification on that. If these are in holding tracks, or if these are access on the exterior tracks that allow for access.
Bill, do you have any additional information?
No. Other than you'll note that the language is rather generous in terms of assisting gaining access, and my recollection is because Mr. Stevenson was concerned that these were not purely providing access.
Mr. Chairman, I remember seeing an email on this a while back.
Yeah.
Because I understand that it was the access that was there now through the land that they have is through swamp wetlands and things like that. This was going to provide them hard access without having to provide a temporary bridge. I think in addition to that, there was one track where they would only be able to access it by a river if they didn't gain the access, which would all but prohibit any management.
Mr. Chairman, it wasn't gaining legal access. They have legal access now. It's better access.
Kirby?
Yeah, I've got another item. It's waiting.
Anything further on that?
Bill, do you have their response to their accomplishment plan? How many tracks they are due to the arrival of the band without the public approval?
22.
Sandy has a copy.
Rick, was there a particular one? I've got the original, or I've got their accomplishment plan, but remember which one?
There's one that was the track sits in the middle of 600 acres of state trust fund land, totally surrounded.
I'm looking at it right here. That's the one I had, yeah. My notes say I need further explanation on that. Because that's the one where they said it would gain access to 295 additional acres. And what was uncertain to me was it's surrounded by, it's the only 40 in a section, but they talk about 295 additional acres. I didn't understand where those were located.
And what I have is totally surrounded, or it says totally surrounded. There was another one that was half a mile common boundary with Cass County, half a mile common boundary with Dry State. Patent Lake WMA, part of the tract is under the Turtle Shell Impoundment. Cooperative lease. So I guess on some of these I have some questions in terms of this particular, if we go back to our prioritization, we talked about having a need for getting access to land that would need man. I see a couple of these are providing a route for a grant-made snowmobile trail. I'm not sure if that's management for forest purposes. So I just have a little question here on parsing this out, and maybe it when we make a recommendation that says we're going to buy this, it weights back to the accomplishment if it's passed. But I have some concerns here on this particular track or particular appropriation amount. I would like to know a little more.
I agree. And in the last line of that appropriation, a list of proposed acquisitions must be provided, I think, as part of the required accomplishment plan. I think that, to me, that is the safeguard that if for some reason the acquisitions that they're proposing don't square up with our priorities, we don't approve the accomplishment plan. And if I recall, when we went through the allocation process, we narrowed down their list. I mean, they had an original list, and we said we're really focusing on those landlocked parcels to gain access to management. So I'm assuming that's what's on the table now. But I guess for me personally, that I want to see that in the accomplishment plan.
And Rick? And I understand the landlocked. When I was thinking landlocked parcels, I was thinking that you had public land that was landlocked but that didn't have access. It appears that on at least one of these, you have the private land landlocked within the public land. So it would be an in-holding rather than an accident.
Yeah, your interpretation is mine.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, can you... You're a forester. What's the legal right for a private landowner that has that's landlocked by public land for gaining an easement?
Well, there's a cartway law that I'm not... I'm only familiar enough to be dangerous with, so I defer to Janelle and Greg, but there is a cartway law for private landowners.
Sure, I'd probably be slightly less dangerous than the cartway law. But generally, with a cartway, though, you have to have, generally, it's been maintained. And so I'm not really that familiar with, I know the state has a number of acres that the state can't access to do that, and I don't think that a private party necessarily has much more. Cartways are generally where there's been access. My knowledge of the cartway law is a transportation issue, so I have not been very involved in that.
So we're not sure that failing to get these in-holding into public ownership, that we're not creating a situation where the landowner would have a legal right to establish a road? I mean, if we don't purchase these properties, are we creating a situation where we're giving people the right to build roads through the forest to get to their private property?
I don't think that's the case, Ryan, but I think that all those questions need to be asked as part of the accomplishment plan so that the specific tracts that they're going to target with Outdoor Heritage Fund money, we know exactly what additional protection, enhancement, restoration is going to be afforded. Rick?
And in what Bill just provided, going back, the Cass County Comprehensive Plan requires a no net loss of acres of public land. So I think this question was asked before, but with these acquisitions, then will there be sales in that county? Are they going to sell property if their county comprehensive plan requires? It's a no net loss or no net gain.
It's near. I can't
hung
answer.
Up where I got hung up. They won't. They don't allow the public to have less acreage.
They're not one of the counties that has a no net gain.
That's right.
Right.
It's a sustained deal.
Okay.
Okay. Company thought progressive.
Other questions about Bill? Darby.
Yeah, let me look at page 8. Excuse me. And item K, the Anoka Sandpoint Restoration Enhancement. And I would ask if the we make a very minor change on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5th line down, where it says something about on state property in the Anoka Sandpoint. And I'm wondering if it would be all right if we X'd out state and put public property. The concern that I have is that state eliminates at least three different projects that were presented to us and that we approved. We would certainly lose the National Wildlife Refuge project. We would lose the University of Minnesota's prairie work project, and we'd lose habitat projects in a county, actually a county park. I'm not aware that we've done anything like that so far, and where we've said it's got to be state, not just it's got to be public, but it's got to be state. And I think that does real injustice to the work that we did before to change that. The initial draft of the language did not include that language, and that's why I ran.
Is that a motion? Or
I would make that as a motion.
Okay, so there's a motion
for the council is to delete state in line 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of the Anoka Sandpoint Restoration and insert public.
And members, just for the record, since I'm a University of Minnesota employee and that would then include the University of Minnesota property, I am abstaining from any discussion on this motion. In fact, I will pass the gavel over to Jim on this particular motion.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
Let me just make a follow-up comment. I really think the question in all of what we do, not just related to this, but the central beginning question ought to be, does the project accomplish constitutional objectives and accomplish the conservation that we are really all about? Rather than being worried so much about where it happens, and I realize that there's some instances there where there might be some concern, but it just seems to me that our number one priority is the quality, the conservation work that's being done in terms of habitat development and so forth.
Any more discussion on this motion? If not, I guess we'll vote. All in favor of the motion as stated?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passed.
And the record should show that the chair didn't vote on the motion.
Okay, further discussion. Rick.
Mike, do all the members have the accomplishment plan, the pop match one now? Or, if you could hold on that, we'll go get copies made.
Yeah, because I think when people see the map,
is that the part of the top?
Well, there's two maps. So. Okay. Any further discussion on the bill? We're going to wait until we get copies. But oh, wait.
As long as we're waiting for the copies, I just got a couple questions because it seems like when we started some of these things a long time ago, you start to forget how it all happened. And so let's go back. And last time, the last meeting we had, we restricted the Department of Natural Resources to 4% from the appropriation for administering the small grants program, correct? And that's part of what's in this bill. And I think at that point they were saying, well, they thought that they would probably need more than that. So over the last week I was thinking, well, maybe what we need to do is try to find some way to reduce the amount of workload that they have then to keep that 4% more in line with their actual output would be. And I started to think about part of the process that they've got is making this, going through the selection process for the different projects which are included for funding. And that is that one of those things. When did we give up that responsibility? Because we go through all the other requests, and we make a determination basically here of which ones are important or not. In some of this discussion, which just came about, is because we're relying on somebody else until waiting after it happens, getting it back. So my question is, when did we give up the responsibility of selecting projects that fit within inside that program? And could we get it back, take the workload off of them, we do the selection process, and we kind of eliminate a lot of these problems?
Greg or Janelle, do you want to just recall history a bit about what happened after we adopted our bill and forwarded it to the legislature regarding this particular provision?
Well, Mr. Chairman, it was NIFWIP, the National Wildlife Foundation,
National Fish and Wildlife Foundation.
Yeah, thank you. And they were going to do it from 4%, and then when it got to the legislature, of course, it changed to the Department of Natural Resources, and 6.5% is what they were allowed last year. But as far as the council cannot act as an administrative body, once the appropriation has passed, the council can't make decisions about whether or not to go forward or which projects to fund. You can only make recommendations to the legislature. So once the appropriation is made, you can't be involved in the decision process over projects funded under an appropriation where a decision has to be made over who gets it and who doesn't. It's not something the council can do.
Well, my thought was, if we have $4 million to spend, can we devise a committee who sits back and does the same thing that the DNR basically does now? Is this council makes a recommendation on which one of the projects we include in this bill. So why wouldn't we just say, here is $4 million, $5 million set aside for small grants program. People apply under that component. We make a selection just like we do under the rest of them. And then when the selection is made, then give it back to the DNR for administration.
Rick, Mr. Chairman, because you would be acting as an executive branch function at that point, this is a legislative branch council. And so by nature of it being the legislative branch, it cannot act as an administrative branch function or any part of it. What would have to happen is the legislature would have to create a panel that would do that. I mean, you could recommend the legislature create a panel that provides that does that, but they would have to set it up as far as whether per diem, all of those sorts of things. But it couldn't be members of the council.
So forgive me, just one more question. So what is the difference between Ducks Unlimited coming forth to the council with a recommendation for $5 million for the projects and individual groups other than Ducks Unlimited come forth with their proposal underneath a $5 million grant program, which we also get the same opportunity to make selections from?
Mr. Chairman Wayne, the difference is that you're making a recommendation to the legislature for that appropriation. That's all you're doing. You're not a granting body. You're just making a recommendation to the legislature. And then they effectuate that recommendation by passing it into law. But once it's in law, it's up to an administrative agency to provide to make decisions basically over how it's spent.
Bill, you've been a while.
Just one other piece of history. The bill that we recommended last session included, I don't have the precise language, but it was a line that was something like no fewer than 5 council members may sit on any evaluation board or group. And that was removed on the basis that Mr. Knott just recited, the constitutionality of it.
And Mr. Chairman, I will add, though, if the council wanted to set up a process whereby you were picking those projects before the appropriation is made, let's say not for this round, you're not going to have time, but if you want to set up a process where you set up a panel prior to the appropriation so that it would be the small grants committee or whatever that would review all of these things in advance and then make a recommendation to the full council to appropriate the money, and those numbers were listed in the appropriation, that would work.
Okay. And that's where I was kind of leading to, is because maybe that's what you need to do. The concern was, even last meeting, was we're waiting until after everything is done and then we get a chance to look at it. the projects, maybe what we need to do is look at the projects first and have the, and then when we're done, determine how many dollars of valuable projects we have, and then have the recommendation for the appropriation.
Mr. Chairman Wayne, that is a possibility. As long as you're doing it as part of a recommendation to the legislature, and go through the regular process that you have, that would be fine. But now, you'd still be subject to all the other restrictions and requirements for making those recommendations.
And if this wasn't converting this year, I'm looking at down the road, because I'd like to have the discussion while it's still fresh in my mind.
Are there further discussion on the motion on the bill?
Rick? I think while we're waiting for the plan, I'd like to go back to the unit Shell Lakes project.
That's on page 5, members.
Rick, I'd like a little more detail on the watershed district's amount of land that they own, how long have they owned it, and how do they own it.
Mr. Schneider.
Mr. Chairman, Council Members, John Schneider, Manager of Conservation Programs for Ducks Unlimited. I apologize. I do not have the exact acreage of the tract that they own. I can find that out for you with a phone call. It's my recollection that it's approximately an 80-acre parcel, and I believe the Watershed District has owned it for approximately 5 to 10 years. We were working on the Moonshine Lake project back when I started with BU in Minnesota in 1999, and I believe they picked it up in the early 2000s. Again, back when there was a plan in place whereby the Watershed District and the Fish and Wildlife Service would purchase the tracts in the basin, and they reached a point where a couple landowners changed their minds and the deal fell apart, and they've been holding it, hoping that some other process would allow for the remaining tracts to be acquired and the project to proceed, which is where we're at now.
Rick? And the Watershed District property, is that all land, or is there wetland on that, or is it access to the... Do you have a map? Or?
Mr. Schneider? Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, there was a map in the handout that I provided during our hearing. I don't think I have a copy of that with me, but I'll ask Ray to look, and I'll scramble and look through here, too. To answer your question, though, this is a 600-acre drain shallow lake, which is owned by multiple landowners. Each parcel has part of the basin and part of the uplands around the basin, much in the shape of a pie, but the parcels are all square pieces. So as you can imagine, the wetland is circular. Actually, it's irregular, but rather circular. And so the parcels are each squared off. Here it is. Thank you, Ray. I can bring this to you, Mr. President. I'm not really sure, to be honest with you, which parcel is the Watershed District's, but it's one of the yellow squares, and we would welcome, you know, the opportunity for the Watershed District to work with us in the context of making a bargain sale or even donating the track for the project. That issue has been raised to their attention through myself, and I believe the council member Bench addressed the Watershed District recently and helped convey that message that we're looking for a partnership. And I'm not extremely familiar with the details of their taxing authority and their funding mechanisms, but I believe they may have the wherewithal to partner with us, and we'd welcome that opportunity, obviously.
Rick,
Paul? Follow-up on the project, but not specifically on the tract of land. There were questions earlier about the salaries and staff. And I see 1.5 million the first year, 1.5 million the second year. Could you maybe just describe how these positions are? Are they existing staff that are funded through DU dollars now? Maybe just a little more explanation on that.
Mr. Schneider? Mr. Chairman and council members, Ducks Unlimited is proposing to accelerate our efforts in Minnesota through adding a new staff person and refocusing, reallocating time from other existing staff persons. We have a very limited amount of base funding each year. We in the past have been supported through grants from foundations that were short-term in nature and through the Environmental Trust Fund, which does not appear to be going to fund us at the same levels as in the past. That's a declining source of funding for our program, as well as the foundation support for at least one of these positions has ended. So we're looking to both add additional capacity and refocus previous staff capacity that are doing other work on this ballot work.
Great. We had asked at the last meeting to give us some idea of what you'd be doing with restoration, and I see the temp specialist and the seasonal interns. And I'm wondering, of that 1.5 million per year for staff, how much of that is work on the ground, additional work on the ground, either burns or vegetation management or things like that?
Mr. Norgaard, I think, probably would be best in a position to answer that. If you could just introduce yourself for the record.
For the record, I'm Ray Norgaard, Wetland Wildlife Program Leader, Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. When we look at these positions, they are field positions. Now, that doesn't mean that every second is spent on the ground in the field, but it means that the priority of responsibilities are. When they're not in the field, they may be doing things in terms of data management or data analysis. But these positions are geared very specifically to do assessment work, to make sure that we understand what's going on with those basins, to do pre-engineering feasibility. That could include topographical surveys of the outlets, that type of work. Then as we move forward in those projects and the engineering, as John has pointed out, with DU staff becomes a very critical component of that, along with work that's done by DU biologists. We have spent many years now, developing a partnership that we can put to work on the ground, taking a project from ground zero, assessing what needs to be done all the way through to construction and or completion of treatment. The positions that are described in this proposal are positions that fit each one of those components, either doing the assessment pre-design work, doing the design work, or guiding the construction contracts that are in place.
Rick, how much leverage or how much is DU or DNR providing to match these dollars, or is there any other dollars that are coming in matching those personnel? I mean, if you have somebody half time to pay off of the constitutional dollars, how much is additional coming in from the nonprofit?
Or Norbert? Mr. Chairman, council members, DU is contributing a portion of the cost of each of those employees, or cost to employ them. I don't have an exact percentage for you at this time. However, overall leverage in the grant is listed in the leverage table in the draft accomplishment plan. We are pledging $100,000 in the first fiscal year and $70,000 in the second fiscal year. Much of that is expense associated with employing people. In addition, the DNR is pledging $500,000 each year of federal aid reimbursement that's related to staff costs to deliver this program.
And that $500,000, Mr. Norgaard, is that what's the source of funding? Is that already appropriated dollars, or is it fish and game dollars?
Representative Hansen, Mr. Chairman. The source of those monies would be through the Pittman Robinson Fund of Tax on Sporting Goods. If I could just clarify too, just for a moment, when we're talking about financial support for these positions, the DNR positions would be fully funded by this proposal. You know, there certainly are, needs for supervision, office space, those kinds of things that would be leveraged by the department.
And John, just, Representative Hansen has used this term of $1.5 million, but that's actually for 2 years, isn't it? That's not for 1 year.
Mr. Schneider?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Cox, that's correct. This is a two-year plus grant. Again, it's my understanding that the acquisition component could be extended over 3 years. We're hoping to finish in 2 years. The budget is for 2 years, but it may, if the land deals drag out a little bit, it may end up extending even beyond.
In that case, Mr. Schneider, what happens then? So you budgeted for 2 years, you're going into half of the third year. Who picks up the costs of those employees in that last 6 months of work? Do you have a plan in case that is the case, Mr. Schneider?
Mr. Chairman, good question. It's always a challenge when you go to budget for a grant like that. We budgeted based on doing it in 2 years. If one of these deals extends out, we'll just have to make alternative arrangements and get her done one way or another.
We do have, staff has passed out the Cass County proposal, their accomplishment plan. So, Rick, you want to go back to that now?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. No, yes, thank you very much. Thank you.
So I'd like council members to look on page 7, page 9 of the accomplishment plan. And I don't think that's what we had intended. My impression was you might have a piece of property on the edge of something that couldn't get in, and here we have two tracts that are surrounded by public land. Now, if there was something extremely unique in there, let's say a remnant population of endangered species or a calcareous fen or something like that, I think it would be appropriate. But I don't think that's what our goals had, and I don't think this is what we should be funding. So I would move to reduce the Cass County project to $200,000 and put that into the overage form.
Bill, can I capture this motion first?
The motion is on page 4 under item B, protect key industrial forest land tracts in central Minnesota, delete $594,000 and insert $200,000.
Discussion on that motion. David.
I'm not sure if we have enough information to know what's behind these. I think there is a discussion, certainly, with when the accomplishment plan comes up. If this is, on page 7, truly a situation where you could have a road going in the middle and someone building a structure in the middle of the Cass County land, I feel differently about it than if it's just an isolated parcel that we're trying to consolidate ownership with. I find all of the language in terms of the final sentence in the description of each of the the parcels to leave me wondering what we're doing, because I don't understand how a purchase of 40 acres protects public management and access to 295 acres. I don't get it in looking at the map. It doesn't make sense. And if you look at all of the accomplishment plans, they're all sort of the same way. If you turn to page 6 just before it, the purchase will protect public management access to 380 acres of other Cass County land. This is an 80-acre parcel on the bottom of a bunch of current Cass County lands, as I read the map. I don't see how what we're going to do provides access to all that other property. So I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt, but I do find it troubling the way they describe what they're doing, and wouldn't be in favor of approving the management plan based on the information they've given us. Perhaps they can clarify it. It's unfortunate they're not here.
Further discussion. Jim.
And I agree with what David just said, but I think it would be premature to deal with the appropriation today until we've heard that discussion on exactly what and go through their accomplishment plan so we know exactly what's been done or it's going to be done.
Further discussion on the motion. Wayne?
I'm not sure, but I thought the question was, in fact, I think you even asked the question that day, if there was any environmental something, if there was anything unique, and they said, yes, there was. And so I thought that that was another aspect of this, not just access, but this. I don't think they specified which ones it was, and so I have another concern, too. But I don't know at this point which one would and which would not have something environmentally unique.
Further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, Bill, do you want to restate the motion?
On page 4 of the draft bill, under item B, protect key industrial forest land tracts in Minnesota, delete $594,000 and insert
$200,000. Bill?
Would we have an opportunity to have them come back and describe that?
Bill, that's the way the appropriation is written is that not one penny can be spent until this council approves their accomplishment plan.
Right.
And just as we've done with the others, we would go through and want to know exact answers to all the questions that are being raised. Which tracks, for what benefit, what enhance, restore, protect activities occurring. What's the benefit to the state for those? So that would be done in June, May, when we start reviewing and approving the accomplishment.
However, if we approve the amendment, it's done.
It's, well, they may have 200,000. Reduce to 200,000?
200,000.
But they'd still have to bring in a accomplishment plan for 200,000.
So we can reduce 200,000 in June to 200,000 in June.
No.
If we don't amend it now.
No, but we can not approve the work plan, which means the money is not to be spent until that accomplishment plan is approved. That would be the way of dealing with that at that time. Because the appropriation has been made, but it wouldn't be released by the Department of Natural Resources until an accomplishment plan has been approved by this council. Just as we did with the Green Corridors project last year, we deferred on that until we got greater clarification on that project. Further discussion on the motion? Hearing none. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion is not adopted. Further discussion on the original motion to adopt and recommend this appropriation bill to the legislature for funding from the Outdoor Heritage Fund in Fiscal 11. Further discussion.
Yes, Greg. I actually was out of the room for a little bit when Bill was going through, so I wanted to just highlight one piece of new language that's in here.
Please.
I get that the whole question that some of you have raised over the Tax Unlimited and other organizations. And I don't know if Bill highlighted this or not. So it starts in the bottom of page 10. There are two new sentences that were not in last year's bill. They'll also be a part of the LTCMR recommended bill. It's the first two sentences in subdivision 7. I think that this is important for council members to note this. I think it's important for the audience members to note this. Because these are going to be auditable conditions on these organizations and entities that receive funding. And so the first sentence of money appropriate in this section may not be spent on activities unless they are directly related to and necessary for a specific appropriation and are specified in the accomplishment plan.
money appropriate in this section must not be spent on indirect costs or other institutional overhead charges. So those are new sentences. They were not in last year's bill. They have not been a part of it. Something I worked out with Susan Thornton over at the LCCMR. They'll be carrying similar language. And I think it's important for people to know that when the auditor reviews any of the projects, that this will be something they'll look at to make sure that any money that's spent can be tied back to the specific project and not used for institutional overhead.
Thank you. Any questions on that? I think it really does tighten up the uses of the fund, and particularly for the organizations receiving. Further discussion on the original motion? Hearing none. Members, this is a decision that requires a minimum of 9 votes to forward to the legislative body, so I would ask that we have a roll call vote on this. Any further discussion? Hearing none, let's take a roll call vote.
Les Bench?
Yes.
Ryan Bronson?
Yes.
Jim Cox?
Yes.
Wayne Anger?
Yes.
Bob Gunther?
Yes.
Rick Hansen?
Abstain.
David Hartwell?
Yes.
Jovan Robertson?
Yes.
Mike Kilgore?
Yes.
Darby Nelson?
Yes.
Scott Rawl?
Yes.
With 10 ayes and no nays and 1 abstention, the motion is adopted. The bill has been recommended to be forwarded to the legislature. And members, I will, as I did last year, include a transmittal letter to the leadership in the House and the Senate and the governor's office that reflects key provisions of this appropriation bill. Members, we did great work. I think we have an excellent process in place. We were very crunched last year. We were still crunched this year, but I think the time we spent identifying our priority habitat needs, engaging the resource managers and the public and ourselves and what those are really has paid off in big ways. And I want to thank all of you, staff and members, for the commitment to getting the bill to the place where it is today. With that, Scott?
After some further deliberation, Mike, I'd like an opportunity to reconsider the motion that we made and passed regarding item agenda 6, which is the Pheasants Forever accomplishment plan changes.
Okay. Members, we have a motion to reconsider the amendment to the accomplishment plan for the Pheasants Forever easement purchase. I assume it relates to the easement purchase. Greg?
Mr. Chairman, just that's for the proper motion. Just to clarify, though, a vote yes is to vote to reconsider.
So the first question is whether or not we want to reconsider that motion. So this is just a vote to reconsider the discussion and the decision. Any further discussion on that motion?
Can we know what we're going to rediscuss?
There really isn't it's not really appropriate necessarily to do that. It's just better to reconsider and then talk about why.
Motion to reconsider the previous motion. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, so we have a rediscussion of that motion.
After additional deliberation and some thought on that, I would like to amend the motion that we passed. We would approve the additional projects that were on the list that Pheasants Forever wanted to add to the list, but that we would, although I strongly support the Pelican Lake project, that we table that project until we get more information and a better understanding of the appraisal values that are referenced to that project. So it would table the Pelican Lake project until we receive more information.
Sandy, do you have that? Motion is clear. Discussion on the motion. Hearing none. I'm sorry. It's premature. David.
When are we getting together next to reconsider?
Well, Bill, I'll turn that to you.
Our next scheduled meeting is May 26th, I believe. It's late May.
And members, the only thing I can think of is that we are referenced in legislation as a partner in developing the legislative guidebook. I don't know where that stands in the process, but we may be asked to participate. I would hope we would be asked to participate in that process at some level, and whether that's a committee of the council or the full council, at some point the full council needs to weigh in, so that may necessitate another meeting. But I think at this point, Bill's right, probably just as last year, at the end of session, or past the end of session, we would get back. Yeah. Jim.
Scott, I'm curious, what new information or what has changed in the last 20 minutes?
Well, it's my thought process that having, you know, just pondering that a little bit, you know, the appraised value of an easement land versus a non-easement land, the precedent that we might be setting as such, I think we need to fully investigate that, what those, the issues that surround that are, to ensure that that when we go forward with a project like that, that all of the discoveries that might come up are discovered. I'm not sure that today in 30 minutes or 13 minutes that we are necessarily able to fully research what some of those discoveries might be.
Further discussion on the motion? Wayne.
I think sometimes we have to allow these organizations to come to us to use their own due diligence to work through these matters. I think an organization like Pheasants Forever is probably going to sit down with them and talk, whether it be Duxton or anybody, is going to sit down and start talking about, like, you guys are on the radar screen here. Maybe we should consider taking a lower value, putting a lower value on it, or the landowner should do a donation or whatever. We don't know whether that discussion has happened yet. You know, and granted, this is just going to be part of the accomplishment plan, and I guess we're going to get a chance to review it. And I do believe that sometimes we have to allow some of these organizations to go forward. And if we find out that they didn't spend the money appropriately or dissatisfied later, we might have to meet.
So, Wayne, just to clarify, this is for last year's appropriation. We would not come back and review this any further.
Not this one, but on all future ones.
Further discussion on the motion? Hearing no further. So, again, can you restate the motion so everyone is clear on what they're voting on?
Okay. Approve the additional project list as presented, but to table the Pelican Lake project for further information on the value of the easement.
Thank you, Sandy. All those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. Thank you. Last item of business is public comments. Bill, did we get any individuals wishing to provide comments to the council?
Mm-hmm. I would ask the audience if there is anyone who wants to provide comments to the council, raise your hand and step forward. Thank you very much. Seeing none.
Motion to adjourn. Again, members, I want to reiterate my thanks to staff and members for the work we did over the last year. I think we did great work.
David would like to make the motion to adjourn, but I would like to, on behalf of all of the other commissioners, thank the chair for an incredible job of leading us through this year's process.
Well, thank you very much. All right. Motion to adjourn. Further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion. We are adjourned.